right, welcome to the Sagebrush Shit Show. We have so much to talk about this week. Get pumped. Starting us off here, we have the Super Bowl. Sam, what do you think?
Super Bowl Sunday, you know, I've rooted against Tom Brady for most of my life. It was rather disappointing to see the Eagles win. Eagles fans are the worst. That's my hot take of the day. Worst fan base in the NFL.
Worse than Raider Nation? Steelers?
Close. Eagles Green fans Bay. Have a special place a special place in my heart as the worst fan base in the NFL. All so right. If you're an Eagles fan, I'm sorry if I just offended you, but your fan base
He's
sucks.
Not sorry at all.
I'm really not. So that's my hot take. Good for you guys, I guess. NFC East represent. Won a Super Bowl, but you know what?
Maryland out here repping.
That's right, man. That's right. But I, you know, it was a good game. Tom Brady put up over 500 yards of offense. The first player in NFL history to throw for 500 yards and lose a game. That's postseason or regular season. So a little interesting tidbit for you there.
Well, Tom Brady is done. It's time for that retirement check.
He'll be back next year.
You're probably right, unfortunately. Well, moving on, we can talk about some of the things that are happening on the Hill. As of tonight, we have 37 bills that have passed both houses on the legislature. Some of them I've already mentioned last week. One of the biggest ones that we want you to know about is the higher education base budget that was passed today. Honestly, it's already at a substitution. It's a lot of money. We're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars being given to Utah State. This is basically the bill that pays for everything we have. It's Senate Bill 001. It's the most important thing, apparently.
Nice.
According to this. I'll be honest, I haven't read through all the particulars. It is extremely, extremely long bill, so maybe we'll give you a little bit more of an update next week. Today, we had a bill or a resolution pass through both houses on a very speed track, encouraging Utah to shoot for an Olympic and Paralympic bid for 2026 and 2030. It's not a huge deal, but it kind of is. There's been a lot of people on both sides. Some people think we shouldn't do it again. I'm all for it. We already have the facilities. They're already well-maintained, ready to go. It wouldn't be a huge investment on our side, but yeah. It is a pretty large international stage.
It's interesting because the list of cities where they can actually host the Winter Olympics is shrinking.
Here comes the global warming talk.
I wasn't going to use the buzzword there. So I guess the chances of Salt Lake City hosting it again are pretty high. I don't know. We'll see. I think it'd be fun. I wasn't here in 2002 when I was like 6 years old when that happened.
Third grade. What up? What up, fam?
But I, you know, maybe Mitt Romney can step in and bail us out again. I'm not sure.
Well, hopefully he's our senator before then. But
well, Jenny Wilson's going to win. So I wouldn't worry too much
about
that.
Man, that'd be wild.
Wouldn't worry
that'd
too
be wild,
that.
Man.
She's only down by 45. She's got a shot.
You're ridiculous. So a few different things have gone through. The National Guard's budget, as well as some interesting changes are on the House right now. One of the bills regarding the National Guard would move the age in which you could be asked to join the militia to 17 instead of 18, and it would raise it from 45 as the cutoff point of when you wouldn't need to join the militia to 60. So you would effectively double or close to double the size of the Utah militia if it were ever needed.
Hopefully not anytime soon.
I don't know why we're worrying about formalities of things that have honestly haven't happened since the pioneer days, but we're changing bills. We're changing things. 1500 bills. We're doing work. I guess senators feel important. And then it removes some other formalities like getting rid of exemptions for railroad workers and a few other industries that maybe don't have the right to not be part of the militia anymore. And then, you know, we're at this point in the legislative session. That's always a little bit interesting every year. I think we're sitting on about 700 or 800 that have been introduced so far. Rumors of 1,500 is the estimated bill count. We're all sitting on a bunch of first readings. Like I said, we've only had 37 pass. But I think an interesting point was brought up by Speaker Greg Hughes this last week that I don't know that I'd fully considered, and I want your take on that, Sam. When asked if they would be willing to consider extending the 45-day legislative session, his answer was basically no, and it wasn't because of personal time for senators. His actual answer was, then we would pass more bills, and I don't think that's what we're trying Absolutely. To do.
No, I've
interesting.
I've heard that argument so many times from, I mean, I don't want to make this a partisan thing, but I feel like this is, it's almost like a political play. You know, when most Republicans, they, like Greg Hughes said, they literally don't want the session to be longer just so government can remain small, which I think is interesting.
Right.
An interesting concept. However, I think we shouldn't limit the effectiveness of government by, you know, making the session so short. I think a 60-day session, 70-day session, or I think, Grant, you even had the idea of having just two
30-day
sessions or something
yeah.
like that. I think that's reasonable. I think it would make the Utah government more efficient, and they do a pretty good job as far as efficiency goes already. But I think
$300 million
Grant's
up. We're doing good.
Grant's showing me the money sign over there. But I think it's not a huge deal, but I would like to see the session extended. I don't think it's fair for the legislators or for constituents to have everything just crammed into 45 days. And I don't see bill counts going down rapidly anytime soon. They're just going to keep going up, most likely. So you have to kind of adapt to the environment.
And that's, I guess, my wonder is it'd be interesting to see an analysis of the bills after this session of what was important, you know, what right. mattered, how have we gone up? How did it stay, you know, the 700-800 bill for so long, and then it went like 1,000, 1,100, 1,300, 1,500, like just so rapidly. The last 3 or 4 years right. is the time that's changed. And is it just fluff bills? Do we just have senators and representatives who are just not actually, like we've talked about on the show before, maybe bills right. that they don't ever actually expect to go through? Or is it, is it lobbying groups that are writing more bills?
I view it as a positive. And if you go and talk to legislators, they'll tell you that the vast majority of bills that they present
are written by lobbyists?
lobbyists are mostly constituents, people who come and they have ideas that they want presented. So I think it's a
Do we not have that filter anymore, though? Like, we're like, sometimes we just say, like, yeah, that's kind of a shitty idea. That's never going to work. Or do we
right.
just say, F
no,
it, write
sure.
a bill.
For sure.
I'll introduce
sure.
it just to keep you happy.
I mean, if you think of the probably hundreds of emails representatives get every single day with people and their, you know, half-ass ideas that they have, I view it as a positive thing. Again,
you'd rather them be full-ass?
It's really hard to say. Be full-ass. It's really hard to say, you know, what the cause is for sure. But at least when you go and actually talk to representatives, that's what they tell you. So,
right.
I guess, tongue in cheek.
Well, what other bills do you want to talk about, Sam? I've got a handful of other ones that I think that people could hear about.
Yeah, I think it's really tough. In terms of things that really affect students, there isn't a whole bunch going on. I was talking with a professor today, and he was telling me he thinks, if not this session, but the next session, that the legislature, I mean, marijuana is a big deal in Utah right now.
Right.
We have almost two-thirds to three-quarters of the population saying they support, at the very least, medical marijuana being legalized. And kind of the idea that I got from him was he was saying that the legislature would pass a bill that would legalize marijuana medicinally that would supersede the initiative, the
oh, yeah.
referendum.
They're calling it SB 45-ing it, which is what they did to a few years ago, if you guys didn't know. I think it was maybe even last session or two sessions ago. There was a bill that was all about Count My Vote is what it was called.
Yeah.
And essentially that's what they did. the legislature put forth a bill that effectively canceled out the ballot initiative before it could go through. And the way this one would work, so if the initiative goes through, it adds language to our laws, right? That legalizes medical marijuana.
Right.
What they would do is effectively pass the exact wording that the ballot wants, except they would add a clause that would mean it wouldn't go into effect until the federal government moves it down to a class 4 narcotic.
Right.
That's not going to happen soon. So effectively eliminates the bill or the initiative.
So that's kind of in terms of big picture things that are happening in the legislature right now. That's what I would be looking into. Marijuana is coming nationally, whether we like it or not, whether, you know, it gets rescheduled or not. Big Pharma, you know, will have a seat eventually. So that's really what I'm looking for. Maybe not this session, but in the near future for sure. I know, Grant, you have a list of bills that you're tracking.
Yeah, so
really cut your eye.
As far as bills go, I think one of the more important ones, we've brought up both these bills in the past. Kim Coleman has a couple bills out there.
Right.
The student right to active counsel has died in the committee as of 30 January. I don't know all the details, but that was a 6-5 vote. So that's essentially allowed you to have a lawyer on the ground if you were in the appeal process with the university. I'm not sure the reasoning for that. I think the biggest one is that they're worried that if you introduce lawyers into the university environment like that, to be fair, the university justification is we're not accusing you of breaking a crime, therefore this isn't a judiciary process, which I think is what the committee has cited on. Her idea is as well, you know, while it might be a university policy, this is a state institution and that can really screw up a student's educational career. So effectively it is a law. That one failed. However, the Student Civil Liberties Protection Act went all the way through the House and has been sent to the Senate. So that's the one she's with Senator DeBacus on. So that one will probably go through. And then the other one that happened the other day that I was interested in was the sexual assault kits. I think we've talked about that as well. It required them to be processed. That passed through the House today. And so, I think you'll see that. That's a pretty big step on the national scale. We do expect this has been talked about in a lot of states. So it put us in the league of a handful of other states that are actually processing these rape kits in an appropriate time frame. But some of these other ones, they're just still sitting in a lot of committees right now. As far as the other news, I did want to talk about a few things. So if you're from Salt Lake, maybe this is more relevant to you. There's a lot of talk right now with the Northwest Quadrant. It's similar. It's kind of the area out by Tooele / closer to the city, effectively where the airport's at. There's looking at a huge development. Right now there's kind of a face-off that's happened actually today between Salt Lake City Council, who has their own plan of what that land should be used for, and they've been moving forward with it. They already have like a master plan proposed, and the Utah State Legislature wants to get involved. I tweeted out about this. It's just really ironic in a state of people who didn't like federal government overreach, telling them what to do with the land in their own backyard. For the state to try to step in on Salt Lake City and tell them what to do with this.
Good take, Grant. Good take.
I know. I stick to my principles.
I give you props.
The legislature's argument is you guys are going to come up with this plan as a city and then turn to us and ask for money anyways. So if that's going to happen, we freaking want to be involved. And they claim they want it to be cooperative. The issue here is power, right? The state ultimately can override the city, and that's kind of what's being called into question of, are you going to do this? Is that what's going to happen? We don't want to waste all of the city's time if you're just going to do what you want anyways. Are we castrating Salt Lake City? And that's with the Rio Grande project for homelessness, where the state is so heavily involved there, and some of the other things that have happened the last few years. This is a bigger conversation than just the Northwest Quadrant. There's a lot of concern that the Republican-held state is having too much control in the affairs of a generally democratic city.
Of course they do.
Political. But you know what? I guess
natural. Every state does the same thing. I mean, my home state of Maryland does the same thing to Republicans. I mean, I'm not, but it's just right. It's the nature of politics. It doesn't make it right.
Right, but you know, when it's a little bit easier when you're on the big government, we should control whatever the hell we want.
That's right.
When you're on the flip side of like, hey, people should control what they want.
Well, it's a different dynamic, especially. Well, in a conservative state that has a growing liberal city in the heart of it, makes some difficult decisions.
Right.
And so they, you know, Republicans already control, 85% of seats in the legislature. So, I mean, I don't really see any room for complaints there.
But. Yeah, and that's what – there's some interesting things. I know I've said this 1,000 times, so forgive me, but – honestly, pay attention to what's happening in the state of Utah. Like Sam's talking about, there's a good chance you could see a party flip in maybe the next 15 years. I don't think it's the immediate future.
That soon? You think it'd be that soon?
It just really depends. I think you do have a lot of move-ins to the state,
yeah.
Especially to Salt Lake Valley.
Decreasing LDS population in Utah.
Yeah, at least in the percentage side. And I'll say this. I don't think LDS number is the only one you can look at. I think that while only say what I think it's like 60 right now,
yeah,
identify as LDS,
which is crazy that a state has that many people identifying.
Yeah, but
as
I mean, like 20 years ago, it was like 90.
You're right. Or you're right. But it's still shocking to me. Anyways, go ahead.
I mean, the South has a lot of Baptists.
That's true.
So
that's true. That's true.
But I think what's interesting about that is it's not just the 60. I think beyond the 60, there's people who are maybe former LDS and other people who have moved to Utah not wanting to practice Mormonism, but conservative in their own right. I think there's at least some portion outside of that LDS number. And of course, like, okay, don't let me even get past this. Just because they're LDS doesn't mean they're conservative, right? We do have the Harry Reids.
Strong correlation there.
We do have the Harry Reids. We do have plenty of individuals have their individual.
75% of Mormons identify as conservative or Republican. So
sounds like a bogus number.
That's not a bogus number. It's shifting for sure. I'd say it's shifting,
right?
Slowly, but when you only have 20% of a religion, I mean,
small
even,
portion,
even like
small
if you
portion,
look, the most,
lean,
the most
lean a hard, solid libertarian route.
The most consistent voting block for the Republican Party over the past 20 years has been the LDS Church. Consistently, they are the highest percentage.
I don't think you can count the LDS vote. I mean, it's like calling it the black vote or the Hispanic vote.
Why?
Like
why,
you're
why
calling
can't you do
in
that?
You're calling in a social group and assigning them
a
political preference.
We have social groups in the U.S.
Yeah, on the left, when you're doing political pandering in the South, yeah, Hillary does use it that way.
Goodness.
I think we need to separate social groups with
goodness.
People's actually belief system. But maybe that's
goodness.
Just me. Maybe I'm a
that's
better
what,
person
that's what
than
we
you.
Do. That's
I don't
what American
know.
Political scientists do. And it's not this. It's the same with Protestants. It's the same with Mormons. It's the same with the Jewish people. It's the same with everything.
The problem is we
analyze every group. And so I don't think it's fair for us to say that a higher percentage of LDS people in Utah means a more reliable Republican voting bloc for the party. That's not a ridiculous
statement.
Here's
the problem. Here's
the
problem. When people compare
the numbers, man.
When people compare religions, the difference is centralization. When people want to blame things on the Mormon church, there's a church to point to.
Right.
The Protestants can do whatever the hell they want. You can, if you are just a non-denominational Christian, if you are a Protestant,
fair.
Even if you're a Baptist, if you're not a Southern Baptist, you don't have to claim Westboro. You don't have to claim any of these,
I agree.
These people.
I agree. And I think that's what makes it the more so much more convincing is that we have a centralized LDS church.
But they don't
that
put
has
out
vast
a, they don't put a like a official statement out.
They don't. But
here,
you know,
vote
70-80% of the church identifies as conservative. That's just those are just facts. That's just the truth.
That's just facts.
So it's not
it's, facts,
it's true,
facts.
Man. It's true. It's true. So it's not ridiculous of me to say that we have that a
I'm not saying the majority of Mormons don't vote conservative. I'm just saying
you don't like it when I say it. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that Utah could change political parties without changing its religious percentage. Let me say that.
I still disagree.
I do think the religious percentage is changing regardless.
slowly.
But I, you know, we can't tie him to a specific statistic all the time. Anyways, I think you could see that happening. It's hard to measure with move-ins how many of those are conservative, especially in a time where the Republican Party has a different vibe to it, right? Are they just not Trump people? Are they hardcore Trump people? Would they vote for another traditional Republican, Mitt Romney, for example, who's spoken out against Trump? It really just speaks to the bigger issue of the fracturing of the Republican Party. Does that actually mean it's going to fracture? I don't know. People said a lot a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, about the Democratic Party. There was so much conversation about how Bernie and Hillary were going to split the Democratic vote and how it was going to get rid of the party and we were going to see the first party switch. And then all at once, everyone got their shit together and the Democrats aren't anywhere near fractured right now. And
I wouldn't say that. But
I'll say this, though. I think when you're the minority party, it's easy to be unified. When you're not in control, it's easy to just, like, look aside, put some of the differences aside for the general good of your party.
Fair.
When you're still in control, it's a power grab.
I will say, the Utah Democratic Party does have major division. If you look at the...
Who would you put on which side? Where does Jim fall? Where does Mayor
Bukupsi
fall?
If you look at the nomination for Senate in 2016, Misty Snow...
Never going to happen.
Right. Very, very controversial.
Right.
We had the left wing of the Utah Democratic Party, which I would argue controls the party.
Right.
More or less, especially since 2014.
The anti-Utah Mormons.
Right, absolutely. And so those people nominated Misty Snow, and then you have the more moderate conservative wing of the party, who's like the LDS, you know, moderate wing of the party, who was pushing for Jonathan Swinton to win the nomination.
Right.
And so there is still division within the party.
You arguably could have won.
Right.
Put people in those categories. What does that mean?
I don't know enough about individual politicians.
Is it fair to say Mayor Bukupsi is on the far left?
I'll say this.
Jim DeBakis is on the left.
I think in terms of the elected representatives in the legislature, they are pretty unified, like you said. But in terms of the statewide party and individuals at conventions and whatnot, I'd say the party is pretty split. And it mirrors a lot the Bernie-Hillary rivalry that goes on. I mean, look at what Bernie did in Utah, where he won, 70% of the Democratic vote in Utah. So
89% on the caucus,
there you
actually.
Go. 89%. Higher than I even thought. So there's some problems in the Democratic Party. And I think when we have, as much as I love Misty Snow, when we nominate a cashier for Senate, like, there are going to be problems.
Right, and, like, not to put anybody's personal life politics on the line, but Misty Snow identifying on the LGBT, especially on a time when gender is such a big issue, I think it was, I don't want to say it, but I think it was a statement as much as it was any belief that it would actually happen.
Absolutely. A part of me admires the party for doing that. I think you have a
Jim DeBakis die on the hill, zero bills pass.
Pardon. Well, you know, if
all you're looking for is a statement, then yeah.
Well, I mean,
the Democrats are killing it.
If you have an election,
the Democrats are doing great in Utah.
If you have an election that you already believe is unwinnable, and they thought they can make a statement, they did. Good for them.
That's what the Republicans did on the national scale, and then it went differently.
Right. So you know, it's possible. You never know. Yeah, interesting times.
Well, in other national news, Trey Gowdy, controversial Republican. He is known especially for working alongside Jason Chaffetz, our own former representative, to be on the committee that investigated Hillary Clinton in the Benghazi scandal. I would say that's when both of them kind of rose to their national status in the last few years. They were both the ones asking the hard questions, getting a lot of airtime,
right,
which is saying something, because most of these committees don't ever see the light of day for the average American. And because Benghazi was such a hot topic, these two did it. Of course, Jason Chaffetz left his post midterm last year, which I have my own opinion about, but...
Right.
Trey Gowdy has announced that he will not be running, and more so, he even said that it's been interesting. He basically said, "I don't want to." He's not going to run for anything. He's been very adamant that he not only will he not be running for anything, he's 100% planning on returning to the judicial branch. Yeah. He probably wants and will receive a judge appointment on a state level, if we're just being honest. You shouldn't be able to choose that. He should really should be saying, I'm going to go back and be a lawyer. Oh, whoops, I got put in as a judge. Realistically, he's going to get a judge appointment probably almost immediately from the time he leaves.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's interesting. We have I think he's the 10th or 11th Republican committee chair that is
going. Oh yeah, it's falling apart. Committees
are falling apart, and I think it's indicative of the environment that they feel that they're in.
I mean, you look at Jason Chaffetz.
sorry,
Utah. Jeff Flake, Arizona. Trey Gowdy, I'm not sure where he's at.
He's from South Carolina, I think, something like that.
You know, these are pretty prominent Republican voices. You saw, what was his name, Bob Bennett?
Yeah.
Died on the Hill.
that's your phrase of the day, Grant. Died on the hill. It means a couple different things, apparently. I don't know.
It can literally mean, you know, pulling an Orrin Hatch. It can figuratively mean
pulling a Jim DeBacchus.
Committing to a bullshit idea because of principle.
Hot take.
Way to go, DeBacchus. Yeah, I don't know. We're coming up on 26 minutes. I don't know that I have a ton else to say. If you have anything, again, always get it to us. You know, not much has happened on the Utah State side of things. We've got a lot of different legislation that's coming up. If you want to read the minutes, if you want to read the Statesman, that's where you're going to get your best stuff. I don't think it's important enough for us to talk about.
We got Trump planning a military parade. Did you see that today?
No.
You see, he ordered like Pentagon officials to have a military parade in his honor, and they're actually planning it. So that'll be looking.
The man is looking more and more like a military coup waiting to happen. I'm not saying anything. Don't FBI, don't listen.
Looking very.
I'm just saying, he's called into question a law enforcement agency.
Yeah.
He called Democrats treasonous in the last 48 hours for not clapping for him. I mean, at bare minimum, the historian in me, it's a cult of personality, and that has never been a good thing, you know. Arguably, Lincoln, don't slaughter me for saying this, Lincoln and some other prominent presidents have had a similar cult of personality. Lincoln, of course, was extremely controversial as a president. Similar to Trump, of course, for different reasons. Please let my comparison die right there and don't call me out on it. But there is something to say about people who make huge change or intend to make huge changes tend to be controversial, and they tend to have only been able to get that office by being controversial and therefore have this cult of personality following.
Right.
There's a lot of examples over history. It's not usually for a good thing. Like you said, every once in a while you get a Lincoln, even Reagan was fairly controversial within the Republican Party.
Right.
Worshipped by some now, but
by a lot now, unfortunately.
Well, you know, trickle down, man. Trickle down.
Yeah. Triple spending.
Anyways, John Huntsman died.
Rip.
Massive donor. The faculty senate announced that they will be doing an investigation into the Koch.
Very interesting.
Donation.
It's a controversial vote.
It was a controversial vote.
27 to 22, I believe.
Something like that. I thought 26, 24, but it was close.
Very close.
Also, the timing was pretty poor, to be honest, because of the Huntsman death. That was a joint donation, $25 million from each family, the Kochs and the Huntsmans. And so it'll be interesting. You know, Sossner, S-O-S-N-R's Society Sossner. Of Students for Natural Resources.
Something like that.
Something. Anyways, there.
Gotta let me some Sossner.
I mean, since Darren Bingham left, I don't pay attention, I'll be honest.
Hot take. Go Sossner.
He was the voice.
Sossner, you have my support.
They came and spoke to the Academic Senate. They mentioned that they do have someone. There's an organization called Uncoke Your Campus or something like that.
Love it.
A representative coming to speak here on campus. So we have some interesting things, but anyways, please give us your takes. Thank you for listening. As always, you can find us on aggieradio.com. Just look up Sagebrush Shit Show or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And of course, please reach out to us personally. You can find us on Twitter at Sagebrush Show,
at Sam N. Jackson,
and at Z Grant Bess. Please, please give us hot takes. Thanks. Bye.